Welcome to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. Today we're going to talk about the number one health problem in the United States. Can you guess what that is? No, it's not television. It's certainly not radio. The number one health problem in the United States is alcohol. Having one too many times. We're going to talk about alcohol and alcoholism. And our guest today is Dr. Chris Dislin. Chris is an assistant professor of psychology at the Institute for the Psychological Sciences in Arlington, Virginia. That institute is where they merge the Catholic faith with the best principles of psychology. Chris is new to the faculty from Illinois. He's a licensed clinical psychologist. He has worked in research, teaching, and in private practice as a Christian psychologist. And he has a lot of experience in working with alcoholic clients. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Great to be here. Great to have you here. Listen, let's start right off because everyone, you know, not everyone, but most people, and we're talking about adults here, will drink from time to time. And what's the difference, the problem between having a drink every once in a while, kind of relaxing and enjoying life, and having a problem with alcohol?
That's a great question, and I think it's one that people will come to a psychologist. Oftentimes, a spouse of someone who's having a problem will come to a psychologist and ask that question. How do I know if there's really a problem here? I think what you have to look at is that these kinds of things are on a continuum. There isn't really a hard and fast rule. It's very difficult to specifically diagnose. There's some real gray areas. What I think about in terms of the issue is that when there's something that's happening in your life as a result of drinking, when you're having specific problems, health problems would be a real easy example, but other kinds of social problems, maybe, you know, performance at work, certainly driving while intoxicated, these sorts of things would suggest abuse of alcohol.
So it starts interfering with your life? Is that one of the signs then?
Yeah, certainly interfering with your life in multiple different areas, maybe in the family, maybe at work, maybe with your own health. That's where we'd start looking at this is alcohol abuse versus use, or the healthy use of alcohol. Dependence, or you know, what's classically called alcoholism, I think people more would prefer the term chemical dependency today because of the stigma that gets attached to the word alcoholic. But a dependency is going to be more clear-cut, where there's a tolerance level. You have a higher and higher tolerance for more and more alcohol. Mm-hmm. There may be physiological withdrawal when you take away the alcohol. The shakes in the morning is what most people would think of, something like that.
Now, these different problems occur at different stages, right? Because, I mean, I know in I used to work in the employee assistance program field, these people with drink problems. Well, it hasn't ruined my job. I've been drinking every night for years and years and that kind of thing. So we started to get the impression that the job was one of the last things to go. What are some of, on the front end, what are some of the first things that you'll notice with alcohol interfering with one's life?
Right, and these are more the gray areas that you're getting at, and absolutely that's a problem, is that people wait too long to deal with alcohol problems. I think that some of the front end areas that I think of, especially in terms of my practice as a Christian psychologist, is looking at what happens in people's spiritual lives, looking at the basis that we're called to discipleship, that lay Christians were called to be developing in holiness, to have Christ formed in us. It's very easy to turn to the bottle instead of to something like prayer or to a spiritual discipline for our relaxation, to deal with angry feelings, to deal with other kinds of feelings that we have. And so when alcohol becomes our solution for all of the kinds of feelings that we're trying to manage, that, in my mind, that's a red flag. Time to start looking at that.
So when it goes from being something just to kind of relax and enjoy company with friends, but it becomes a problem solver or a way to medicate, and that's when you're crossing from the into the red flag zone?
Right. Sort of this concept that social drinking is one thing, but if I can't go to a social event without a drink in hand, is that still social drinking?
Now, it's common for alcoholics or people who have a drinking problem or abusing or to not see that problem. I mean, is that part of the dynamic of it? They're one the last to know or last to acknowledge. Is that your experience?
Yeah, that's what we call in my business denial, the big word. And that's probably the biggest issue that you find with alcoholism and other addictions is the issue of denial. And it's what makes this so difficult to deal with and why so often it runs on too long before help is brought in. Mm-hmm. Because even family members may be involved in this process of denial. We'll talk some, I hope, later a little bit about how this affects the family and what this looks like in the family system. But denial is the big beast that has to be overcome for help to be gotten.
But your point is it's not just the problem drinker or the alcoholic that has the denial. It could also be a characteristic of the family.
Absolutely.
And the people around
him. Absolutely.
Well, it's part of contributing to denial that the image we have of the alcoholic is the skid row drunk. And as you, right. Even if you have drinking problems, I'm not like that guy.
Right.
You know, I don't have that right. kind of problem.
Right. And what's interesting about that, you know, maybe it would help to talk about a little bit about some of the facts about alcohol and alcoholism to get rid of some of these myths that are out there, because these are very, very common myths. And one of them is the skid row alcoholic. Very, very, very small percentage of people with alcohol dependency are that skid row kind of drunk. The vast majority of alcoholics are what you would call functional. They hold down jobs. They're functioning. Not at the optimum that they could be, but they're functioning. And many, many of them are professionals, degreed, that you wouldn't suspect. And so part of what happens, and it fits with denial, is what can happen is the person with alcohol problems thinks, not me, it couldn't be me. I got a great job, you know, I'm not in risk of losing my job. But there are other things we certainly would want to look at in terms of deciding, hey, is this a problem or not?
Well, maybe we can get into those some of those effects that happen, because it sounds like it's a more subtle thing than we think. We have this mm-hmm. image of a person who's a total loser. I'm not like that, ergo, I don't have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking with Dr. Chris Dislin. We're talking about alcoholism and its effects on individuals and families. You're listening to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. This is your host, Art Bennett. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. We're talking to Dr. Chris Dislin from the Institute for the Psychological Sciences. Chris is talking to us about the number one health problem in the United States, and that's alcohol and alcoholism. Well, Chris, you were mentioning that denial is the biggest problem, and also that there is some vagueness, not just denial, but it sometimes is hard to really determine if somebody has a mm-hmm. problem. So can you talk to us a little bit about the effects? Maybe by the effects we can kind of back in to see if a person has a problem by the fruit or lack of fruit that they bear in their lives.
Yeah. Before I go to that, I want to talk relative to denial. One of the things I think it's important to think about and the myths about alcohol is you keep saying it's the number one problem, and maybe some people are surprised by that. You think of cancer or heart disease or something like this. But there are a bunch of different facts about alcoholism that I think are interesting. One that you mentioned, the other is, if you think about how many Americans it's estimated have alcohol problems, we're talking about roughly 18 million people. This clearly points out that it's not just a small group of people, the skid row drunk. If you think about that, that's about one in 10 or 12 people that drink who have some problem with alcohol. So everybody somewhere has met a person
right.
who is very likely dependent on alcohol. If you think about the number of deaths related to alcohol, not counting deaths caused by violence, we've got statistics that suggest that a quarter of all emergency room admissions, a third of all suicides, more than half of all homicides, and incidents of domestic violence have alcohol involvement. Traffic fatalities, in 2000, about 40% of all traffic fatalities were alcohol-related. In raw numbers, that means that about every 3 years, we have the same number of people dying that we lost in the entire Vietnam War, 12 years. So it's interesting that we don't talk about this that much. And it's part, I think, of our culture, that we're – alcohol is a part of our culture. And it's a good thing. In fact, for the Christian, it's a gift. And when we use it wisely, prudently, it's a great thing. But that, I think, disposes us to not talk about the negative side or the dark side of alcohol, which is what I'm here to do.
So it's perhaps the biggest problem, but it's also one of the most difficult problems to talk about. So here we have this big thing in our culture and in our lives. You're right. Who doesn't know someone who has been seriously debilitated by alcohol? But it's not an easy thing to talk about. That's why we brought you here, because you can talk about it. Let's ask this, Chris. Why would people – what encourages people to become alcoholics? How does it go that way?
Well, you know, we really don't know a lot of facts about this. Research suggests there is a genetic predisposition, and so we have certain cultures that may be more predisposed or less predisposed to developing alcoholism. So not everybody that drinks regularly or drinks heavily is going to develop alcoholism, and it's difficult to identify who that's going to happen to, but it happens less among Jewish folks, more frequently among the Irish. And there's a suggestion also that it runs in families, and that's something to do with genetic predisposition. But again, it's important to know that when I say genetic predisposition, that doesn't imply, you know, a one-to-one sort of situation. That doesn't mean that you're doomed if your grandfather was an alcoholic or your dad was not. It doesn't mean you're doomed. You know, you're not going to necessarily develop this, but it increases your risks. We know other things about families in terms of risks for developing alcoholism. One interesting thing is, I think in terms of responsible drinking, when we look at alcoholics in terms of research, we find that the family may have been completely abstinent, with very strong moral values against drinking at all, teetotalers, so to speak. And alcoholics may tend to come from that sort of family because they get into an environment that encourages drinking, and perhaps they just don't have the background with it. It's been presented as very negative. They get into a very supportive environment of alcohol. They enjoy it. And may be predisposed to alcoholism. The other side, of course, is the family where alcohol is being regularly abused, or there's alcohol dependency that the kids are seeing, and that's going to be a risk factor. So you've got that middle zone where responsible drinking is demonstrated.
Mm-hmm.
But what is responsible drinking? The USDA and other health organizations have proposed that drinking in moderation, and maybe everybody should sit down for this one because I think it can be a bit of a shocker, but drinking in moderation is one drink per day for women, two drinks per day for men. There's a difference because there's a difference in the way males and females metabolize alcohol. It's not just a body weight thing. Beyond that level, we start to get into health risks, cancer, risks of esophageal cancer, oral cancer, breast cancer for women. We start to outweigh all the benefits that you hear about on the news at night about having wine every day and how this is going to help you with heart problems. Well, there's a mixed bag there. You know, there's research on both sides of that. So you go beyond that moderate amount, and you start to increase the risks.
But you said earlier that when it starts to change from being something you just use to kind of relax a little bit, when it starts starts becoming something to help you solve problems or manage stress or relax because you're so uptight and all that. When you start crossing into that, and maybe the second, third, and fourth drink starts bringing one into that, but just kind of from a common sense point of view, is that kind of what we have to watch for? Am I drinking just to have a little break, or am I drinking to solve my problems?
You know, I think many of us use alcohol to relax. It relaxes us. It's great. It works well. But you bring something up that's interesting. You know, one or two drinks. Okay. What about the third or the fourth? Mm-hmm. And is there a progressive pattern where the amount of drinking increases so that it's daily and then it's four drinks a day, five drinks a day? That's certainly a warning sign.
We're talking with Dr. Chris Dislin on alcoholism and problem drinking. You're listening to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. This is your host, Art Bennett. We'll be back right after this commercial. Welcome back to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. Chris Dislin of the Institute for the Psychological Sciences, Chris the psychologist, is helping us understand this big problem of alcohol and alcoholism. And Chris, part of what you're saying is part of the reason it is a big problem. There are lives lost probably every minute of every day because of this thing, and it's the number one killer health problem, at least in the United States. So here we have this big problem, but part of the reason it is such a big lumbering problem is hard to identify it as a problem. It's hard to know exactly when. Now, all of us have in mind when the serious drunk. We all know when it's a big problem, the person
right.
bottoms out, job loss, liver problems, all that stuff. So we probably have a pretty clear image of that, but maybe that clear image eclipses some of the more subtler signs that come up in the initial part. And so we need to be acute about identifying tendencies and things that are getting us in the wrong direction here, because the risks are real with this problem.
Yeah. I think that early signs to be looking for, before the break, we're talking about this increasing pattern, which could be a sign of tolerance building up. Now I need more. You know, I come home, it's been a tough day. Hey, 6 months, a year ago, one or two glasses of wine, you know, I relaxed, I felt good. I find that, you know, I'm drinking half a bottle, maybe a bottle of wine.
To get the same effect
I got
6 months ago.
Yeah. Get the bottle of wine open, ask my spouse, hey, honey, do you want to have some wine with me? No, I'm not going to. Well, hate to leave this in the fridge overnight. I think we'll just go ahead and finish. You know, this sort of pattern where you just ease into an increasing amount of the substance to achieve the same effect. Now, that's kind of the physiological component, right, or psychological component that's happening is an increasing amount. But there's a spiritual side to this as well that I alluded to before. And as a Catholic psychologist, I think it's important to consider that, you know, our worldview as Catholic psychologists is different. We don't just look at the physiological, and so we're concerned about the whole person, a more holistic kind of approach. And when I think about alcohol use from a spiritual perspective, you know, two things come to mind. We are not forbidden to use alcohol, and there's certainly some Christians that would hold a different line on that. But Scripture and tradition are clear that alcohol is a gift from God, that when used wisely and prudently is a good thing. On the other hand, there are a lot of admonitions about drunkenness that we can find in the Scripture, and certainly in our catechism, there's a suggestion that to get intoxicated and get behind the wheel of a car is a grave sin because we really risk lives, and what really we're talking about is the idea of human dignity. And when you think about extreme drunkenness and intoxication, the moral theologian is going to say, we start to lose our faculties, our rational faculties, and when we intentionally do that, I specifically say intentionally, you know, when we kind of set out to just get ripped, that's something that is clearly sinful. I've read one particular moral theologian who would suggest that drunkenness per se is probably a venial sin, but it moves into grave matter when you start having, motor vehicle involved, other sorts of issues. What if I'm predisposed that when I become intoxicated, I have a tendency to get a little violent, maybe just a little aggressive with my spouse or my kids, maybe just angry or very bitter in terms of my words to them. In that case, I have to say, you know, as a Catholic, as a Christian, what role does alcohol play in my life then? How is this an offense? Is it something that I then need to deal with sacramentally in terms of confession, reconciliation? It's a serious point to be considered. And I think if we're sensitive spiritually, it's going to help us to be more sensitive to the problem. I think if we stay spiritually sensitive and are really examining our conscience in terms of our behaviors and what we're doing, it's going to be easier for us to notice early problems with alcohol.
So this is, I think you're making a real important point here. This is one of the ways to kind of get this thing out of the, right out of the gate, because maybe unlike the job or unlike health problems, and maybe even unlike marital problems, one of the first areas that will start to show signs of problems is going to be the spiritual side.
Absolutely.
And, of course, arguably the most important part of life. So I think you're really giving us a good handle here, because I think when you worry about the physiological, the job things, well, those can come so downstream.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's not too many 20-year-olds with liver problems, though there are. It's the people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s that have them. But on the spiritual side, right away, you'll start seeing what a dampening of the faculties, a certain perhaps distractedness, mm-hmm. and a certain kind of handling pain and handling discomfort with this very available drug. So you're talking about the examination of conscience, looking at ourselves and how am I doing what I'm doing?
Yeah. Well, is it something that I'm bringing in with me in terms of confession? If I got looped last week at a cocktail party, is that something I even bring in as an issue,
mm-hmm.
you know, and drove the family home or something like this? You know, is that something that comes in as an issue or not? So am I sensitive to it that way? But even beyond that, how is this affecting my prayer life? Do I tend to find that this is creating a distance between the Lord and myself? And I think that's the place where each of us inside our own heart can feel, we can feel that distance. If you ask a person, how close do you feel to God? Most people will have a direct answer for that. They'll think about that and say, you know, I feel pretty distant right now. I feel closer. That's the place of sensitivity. That's the place to start looking at it. What does this do to my relationship with Jesus Christ? Where is that playing out in terms of my alcohol use? And I would say, you know, healthy use should not be an issue. But when I start moving into abuse, not necessarily being physiologically dependent, but abuse of alcohol, it can start to create some distance there, and that's the place to look.
We've been listening to Dr. Chris Dislin of the Institute for the Psychological Sciences, and Chris is showing us some aspects of alcohol and alcoholism that are rarely mentioned. He's talking about the spiritual side of the spirits. Chris, thank you very much for joining us. We're going to have you on again right away. This is a big topic. We have more to talk about here. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
You're listening to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls on WUST 1120 AM. You can also catch this and other programs on www.wust1120.com. Thank you for listening to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. This is your host, Art Bennett.